This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Russian forces pounded Ukraine's eastern Donbas region on Saturday, but failed to capture three target areas, Ukraine's military said, while Moscow said Western sanctions on Russia and arms shipments to Ukraine were impeding peace negotiations. The Russians were trying to capture the areas of Lyman and Donetsk and Severodonetsk and Popasna in Luhansk, the general staff of Ukraine's armed forces said in a daily update. And Russia believes the risk of nuclear war should be kept to a minimum and that any armed conflict between nuclear powers should be prevented. The TASS news agency quoted a foreign ministry official as saying Saturday, Vladimir Yermakov, the foreign ministry's head of nuclear nonproliferation, said all nuclear powers must stick to the logic laid out in official documents aimed at preventing nuclear war. Shanghai said on Saturday it had detected no new daily COVID-19 cases outside quarantine areas, marking a milestone in its battle to contain the virus, which has paralyzed the city of 25 million and put residents in the capital, Beijing, on edge. Streets in Beijing were eerily quiet at the start of a five-day Labor Day break, with residents anxious that authorities would impose further restrictions during a holiday when many typically travel or socialize. France gears up for May Day protests and a first test for newly reelected President Emmanuel Macron. The protests are scheduled for Sunday. One woman who plans to attend the protest said that choosing between Macron and Marine Le Pen in last Sunday's presidential runoff was like choosing between plague and cholera. This is VOA News. And again, this is VOA News. Dozens of people were trapped under a building which collapsed in central China, officials said Saturday, as rescuers clawed through the rubble and used buzzsaws to pull several survivors free. The building, which housed a hotel, apartments, and cinema, caved in on Friday afternoon in Changsha City in the Hunan province. At least 23 people remained trapped late Saturday, while 39 others were uncontactable after the incident, the local mayor told reporters. No casualties have been reported so far, and city authorities said five people were rescued from the collapsed structure overnight. There was no immediate cause for the disaster given by authorities, although speculation turned to possible overwork on the property. Tenants had made structural changes to the premises to varying degrees, CCTV reported, adding that the reason for the collapse was under investigation. Millions of people across 11 provinces in Afghanistan faced blackouts on Saturday after two power transmission towers were blown up just west of the capital, Kabul, authorities said. The outage comes ahead of the Eid al-Fitr holiday that marks the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Two pylons in the province of Parwan were bombed late on Friday, cutting off electricity to the capital and neighboring provinces. Police said two suspects have been arrested over the explosions. Two gunmen killed an Israeli guard at the entrance of a settlement in the occupied West Bank, the Israeli army said, and soldiers deployed to a nearby Palestinian town in search of the attackers. In an apparently unrelated incident soon after the attack in Ariel late on Friday, Israeli forces shot dead a Palestinian man in the northern West Bank village of Azun, the Palestinian Health Ministry said. Israel's military said soldiers there shot at suspects who had thrown firebombs at them. And Germany has filed a case against Italy at the highest UN court, because Rome continues to allow victims of Nazi war crimes to claim compensation from the German state, even after an earlier ruling that such claims violated international law. Germany's application to the International Court of Justice, or ICJ, published on the court website late Friday, says Italy continues to allow compensation claims to be brought in domestic courts despite the ICJ's 2012 ruling that this violated Berlin's right to immunity under international law. For more stories, please visit us at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Let's think of others as well as we plan, as we celebrate. Let's not just make it about fun and, you know, the sporty side of it, but let's make it a helping. Let's help each other along. Let's give each other a helping hand, not just in Zambia, but across the world.
Zambia marks the inaugural Kaunda Day celebrations across the country.
Well, there are continuous progressive discussions between the victim center and all our stakeholders, I mean, that have interest in the Gambia's transitional justice process. We are in constant dialogue and engagement with the entire civil society movement in the country.
Victims of human rights violations say they welcome the trial in Germany of a suspect driver of the Jungle's death squad under former President Yahya Jammeh.
Bottom line is that I think we said them and the people around him, and there are many people, many Kinerugawa and Sudia, they have been praying a lot on social media. They believe that this is the time to try to project him as the next leader of Uganda.
And the son of Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, celebrates his 48th birthday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Zambia, last Thursday was the statutory holiday to honor the country's founding president, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda. It marked the inaugural Kaunda Day celebrations across the country. April 28 is the birthday of the late leader, and the day in his honor is marked by calls for national unity. Several activities were included on Thursday, including a cleanup campaign in the central business district of the capital, Lusaka. President Hakainde Hichilema took part in the exercise, while Vice President Mutale Nalumango also opened the Kenneth Kaunda Temporal Exhibition at the Lusaka Museum. Kenneth Kaunda led Zambia to independence and was the country's leader for 27 years, from 1964 to 1991. He died last year on June 17. For reaction to the first Kaunda national holiday, I reached the late president's daughter, Cheswa Kaunda.
First of all, when this day was declared, that was last year by the former president, and we were very humbled and grateful that he would give us such a special day. His birthday was always a day we spent with him, sang with him. So it's a special day in the sense that it's the first time we've had his birthday without him. But because of the love that the people have shown around us, the things that they've done, the activities that we've been to, I'm ending up here with a golf day now. I'm at a golf day, which the Lusaka Club kindly put up in memory of him. So, you know, we're really humbled and we're touched and we feel comforted that he was so loved. We didn't know he was that loved, but all these activities have shown us that.
Your father always talked about one Zambia, one nation, one people. Does this holiday signify or bind Zambians together to achieve that kind of aim?
Yes. The One Zambia, One Nation, One People, as you say, was to unify the country. Sometimes you might find that you're being divisive without knowing it, but that One Zambia, One Nation was to bring the people together, the different tribes, the different nationalities, not just tribes, but nationalities. We've got so many people living here. It was a rallying call, actually, to unify the people. So I think going forward, this will be a day to remember that. And everybody today remembered him in the different ways that they wanted to. So if it was sport, it was sport. If it was golf, sports, it was soccer. I think there was a jog as well. There was a run. So, you know, it's special in that sense.
What do you think would be the major takeaways that Zambians can learn from your father, the founding president of Zambia?
I think Dad was, he loved people. He had a passion for people. He had a passion for the Zambians. He had a passion for the neighbors. because you always said you can't be at peace if your neighbor is not at peace. So I think the one thing we should remember, one thing people can remember, is the love and the unity that she promoted and the peace that she wanted for everybody. So the One Zambia, One Nation, I think, encompasses all of that.
Looking forward, as a Zambian, somebody who saw father rule the country for many years, what do you think they should learn from your father's leadership, especially with recent elections? It's changed hands politically. Several leaders have come after him. There have been all kinds of allegations and counter-allegations. Where do you think Zambia should be moving forward?
I think Zambia should be moving in the direction of unity, because without unity, you will not have peace. Zambia should be forgiving. Without forgiveness, you won't have peace. So I believe that the way forward is to embrace each other. We're all different. We have differences, and embrace the differences in each other. And I think for me, that would be the best way forward. Accept each other for who we are and what we are. And I think the other thing would be his humility. You know that when he lost the elections, he actually cut his 5-year term by half to allow for multi-party elections, which hadn't been in existence for a while. So he did that. And when he lost the elections, he sort of humbly gave in. And he just said, you win some and you lose some, and he went away. So I think it's a question of humility as well. We need to have that within ourselves.
What is your message to the people of Zambia and to the rest of the world as the country celebrates the first Kaunda holiday?
Yes, I think my message would be that we unify on this day and remember him for the things that he loved. Remember his passions and the things that he used to do and loved to do. And his grandchildren, for instance, today went and gave some foodstuff to an old people's home. So let's think of others. Let's not just think of ourselves. Let's think of others as well as we plan, as we celebrate. Let's not just make it about fun and, you know, the sporty side of it, but let's make it a helping. Let's help each other along. Let's give each other a helping hand, not just in Zambia, but across the world.
Cheswa Kaunda is the daughter of Zambia's founding president, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Uganda, the son of President Yoweri Museveni, General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, celebrated his 48th birthday this week. The occasion, local media reports say, turned into a national event with high-profile attendance, including President Museveni and top government and military officials, as well as Rwandan President Paul Kagame. General Muhoozi Kainerugaba is the commander of the Land Forces for the Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF. The high-profile birthday celebration, analysts say, may be a subtle way for the president to introduce his son as his successor whenever he steps down as leader of the East African country. For the latest development and analysis, I reach Godbert Tumushabe. He is a lawyer, policy analyst, and social entrepreneur, and a prominent Ugandan civil rights activist.
Muhoozi Kainerugaba was celebrating his 48th birthday, and essentially, quite a good number of these cheerleaders pushed to make it more or less like a national event. Even some of the streets were closed because of the same event. So there are those people who are really President Museveni regime sympathizers and cheerleaders who want Muhoozi Kainerugaba to succeed his father as president. But I think they also don't understand the real power play in Uganda right now, because my view is that he is trying to condition Ugandans to be able to accept Kainerugaba as his successor whenever he leaves that office, either by an act of God or whenever he's pushed out. So what we are seeing is really a very orchestrated effort by both Museveni and his regime sympathizers to be able to promote Muhoozi Kainerugaba.
Godbert, in some of the papers in Uganda, they have reports of Ugandans or a section of Ugandans calling for support for General Kanyarugaba, that he should step in and take over from his father when his father retires from office. The calls appear to be growing louder and louder.
No, the call is orchestrated, Peter, because this, you see, Uganda has degenerated into what we call milk card politics. Everybody is really looking for where to get some, you know, some money, some jobs. So you're basically looking at a country where the entire system of government is run on political patronage. So everybody who is part of that patronage network knows that without appearing support to Nerugawa, definitely they can even lose out. So I must consider that there could be people who genuinely believe or are interested in Kinegra becoming the president, but I think that a lot of that noise is being driven by the regime survival politics, by the patronage system, by the kind of benefits that accrue because of the regime. Because remember that right now, President Museveni is the regime survival.
What are your thoughts about suggestions that his birthday bash, which has lasted for some time now, that dovetailed into a national event, is a way of projecting General Kanyarugaba as the next president or the next leader of Uganda?
Yeah, that is really this birthday celebration was organized in a very, very orchestrated manner. So actually, you can call it a launch pad for launching Kinerugawa into politics. I think my disappointment is that they could do it this Saturday, because I think that Kinerugawa as a senior American officer should be protected from the kind of noise that we saw, because I think it's really being unfair to him to be able to put him in a position where he's actively breaking the law. And yet, as a military officer, he should be the first person to abide by the law. And essentially, the bottom line is that I think Museveni and the people around him, and there are many people, many Kinerugawa enthusiasts, they have been playing a lot on social media. They believe that this is the time to try to project him as the next leader of Uganda. And essentially, what happens, because it happens a lot across these African military regimes, that you condition the population that there is no any other option. This is the only option. So the population gives up in wanting to have choice in terms of leaders. So that's basically the effort that I saw being launched on 23rd of this month.
Godbertu Mushabe is a lawyer, policy analyst, social entrepreneur, and a prominent Ugandan civil rights activist. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. More than 35,000 refugees who have fled to Uganda this year, seeking safety from violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan, are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and 44 humanitarian partners are urgently appealing for $47.8 million to respond to the critical needs of newly arrived refugees. Uganda already hosts more than 1.5 million refugees, the largest refugee population on the African continent. While the 35,000 refugees who arrived this year constitute only a fraction of that number, their needs nonetheless are great. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshirkov says a third of those have arrived in just the past 3 weeks from the Democratic Republic of Congo. They had fled intense fighting in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Sporadic clashes in South Sudan's West Nile state also have sent thousands fleeing into Uganda this year. Cheshirkov says a large proportion of the refugees this year, as in the past, are women and children.
In fact, that is one of the priorities that we have, the prevention and response to, for instance, gender-based violence, to child protection needs. But the main thing that we need to provide now is shelter. It's food. It's basic household items. And these things are needed urgently. And that's why we need those funds right now.
Cheshikov says the appeal is intended to support an initial emergency response to an anticipated influx of up to 60,000 refugees in Uganda in the first half of this year.
As reports of violence in eastern DRC and South Sudan continue, this appeal will also strengthen Uganda's capacity to receive more refugees in case of further displacement. Funding is also to urgently support needed health care supplies, as well as water, sanitation, and hygiene services required to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and other diseases.
Cheshikov says the UNHCR is working with the government of Uganda and humanitarian partners to provide emergency assistance and protection to refugees in border areas. He says efforts are being made to move them to refugee settlements as soon as possible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In the Gambia, victims of human rights violations say they welcomed the trial in Germany of an alleged driver of the Jungler's Death Squad and a former President Yahya Jammeh. The suspect, Bai Lu, is accused of crimes against humanity, murder, and attempted murder. This as the Gambia Center for Victims of Human Rights Violations petitioned the government in Banjul to expedite action to hold accountable those responsible for gross human rights violations during Jammeh's rule. The group is also demanding the full implementation of the report by the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. It was established in 2018 to examine the alleged abuses under the former president's 22-year rule. For more reaction about the ongoing trial in Germany, I reached Sherif Kijera. He is the head of the Gambia Center for Victims of Human Rights Violations.
This is a welcome development from the international community, taking their responsibility to make sure that international justice takes place in the case of the atrocities committed by Yahya Jammeh's henchmen, the Junglers, with the gruesome murders that took place in Gambia by the Junglers which participated in them. So it is a welcome development. It has further given hope to the victims that the international community is not leaving them alone. The world is working with them through the fight for justice. We very much welcome that development.
Sherif, how significant is this development, especially when some victims are calling for other countries to follow the German action by going after those suspected of being behind the so-called Junglers who tortured victims or tortured opponents of the former president?
The action taken by the German government set the precedent for other countries to follow. We know that the United States has taken a very strong step to bring to justice Michael Sankoria. He's already in their custody. And we have also seen that the Swiss government also have taken into custody the former Interior Minister Ousmane Sonko, who is also being investigated for crimes against humanity. That we are encouraging other African countries to follow suit as has been demonstrated by both the German authorities and the U.S. and the Swiss authorities.
But, Sherif, the APRC, for which the speaker heads, says that the speaker is without blemish and that the TRRC investigated and he was not found guilty of any crimes or any human rights abuses. So his supporters say that victims of the violence perpetrated during Jammeh's time cannot be attributed to him because he was just a member of the party.
Well, for Fabakare and Sirinjai not appearing before the Truth Commission does not make them completely innocent of the dictatorship and the gruesome human rights violations that were perpetrated on Gambia. What the Junglers did for Yahya Jammeh I mean, the, as members of the security, I mean, the apparatus killing for Yahya Jammeh. It's the same way that Yahya Jammeh used, I mean, the legislators in the National Assembly, I mean, the, to make bad laws as a cover-up to the gruesome human rights violations that were that orchestrated and then, you know, committed on Ghanaians. We know about the April 10, 11, when Yahya Jammeh ordered the security forces to kill innocent students that were out on the street expressing their legitimate concerns, holding a very peaceful protest.
What's next for you, especially for those who were victims of the human rights violations that were carried out under Yahya Jammeh?
Well, there are continuous progressive discussions between the victim center and the other stakeholders, I mean, that have interest in the Gambia's transitional justice process. We are in constant dialogue and engagement with the entire civil society movement in the country. And also we are continuing to engage constructively the government through the Ministry of Justice. Currently, the Ministry of Justice have launched a platform for a collaborative mechanism between the Ministry of Justice and the CSOs, I mean, that work on the modalities, I mean, to ensuring that the TRRC report and recommendations are well, I mean, implemented, and also to work on a successor plan, I mean, a successor institution that is going to replace the TRRC, and to implement some of the recommendations on reparations and other aspects of providing remedies to victims as well.
Sherif Kijera is the head of the Gambia Center for Victims of Human Rights Violations. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. The UN's refugee chief, Filippo Grandi, on a visit to Cameroon this week, vowed to give more support to displaced Central Africans and Cameroonians fleeing intercommunal violence. Grandi spoke at a ministerial conference in Yaoundé on helping refugees from the Central African Republic and during a visit to northern Cameroon. For VOA, Moki Edward Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has said the UN's refugee agency, the UNHCR, would step up support for nearly 1.4 million displaced Central Africans. Grandi was speaking at a conference in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, with ministers from Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, the Republic of Congo, South Sudan, and Sudan. They are all countries with displaced people and refugees from the Central African Republic that have fled ongoing fighting back home since 2013. The ministers pledged to continue to support ongoing reconciliation efforts in the CAR for peace to return to the troubled states, so that IDPs and refugees can go home. Grandi praised Cameroon, which hosts about half of the CAR's refugees.
Vous avez ici, presque un demi-million.
He says Cameroon is home to about half a million refugees from the Central African Republic, Nigeria, and other nationals who find hospitable reception and peace in the Central African states. Grandi says he met with Cameroonian authorities and UNHCR partners to find ways of increasing and coordinating international aid to improve conditions for people displaced from their homes by crisis. The UNHCR says about 600,000 people are internally displaced in the Central African Republic, while another 700,000 have fled to neighboring countries. Olivier Fafa Atidza is the agency's representative in the CAR.
They believe that they can find security once they get outside Central African Republic, especially coming to Cameroon and the other neighboring countries like Chad and DRC, Sudan and South Sudan as well.
Ministers attending the Yaoundé conference said less than 10% of the $226 million needed in 2022 to help displaced Central Africans have been raised. They urged donor agencies and states to contribute more funds. Meanwhile, Cameroon's Territorial Administration Minister, Paul Atanganji, said President Paul Biya ordered his government to continue helping refugees in Cameroon. He says Cameroon assists the UNHCR by providing free health care for all Central African refugees and free education for their children. He says Cameroon provides security for all refugees and land for the construction of refugee camps. The UN says Cameroon also hosts more than 100,000 Nigerian refugees who fled Boko Haram terrorism. UN Refugee Chief Grandi also visited Cameroon's northern border with Chad and met villagers who fled intercommunal violence between farmers, ranchers and fishers in December. The UN said more than 100,000 Cameroonians had fled over the border to Chad, where most remain. Cameroonians displaced to the Bogo refugee camp said they would return to their villages, but only after rival communities agreed to peace. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
I'm Attention, I'm talking to you, you are respond. Give me your curry mess, no. I can't even be asking a question. You know they look fresh, so it's like you don't know my name, no. Oh, fair, come and take, no. Hey, you talk to any boyfriend, oh, let's go. Now me say so, see, I stand, I balance. Because I'm a machine, you know, see my car, pyjama. You know, see the swag, galant. See many they claim my madam, but I don't know these babes from madam. They just want to follow the ladder. They know that nobody is badder. She say why ain't they flex like every gym? Make it a hope they get the gym. Is he by force to be with him? If he say military regime, I be such a man. I say stand at peace. Jury dollar, my big violence. It's no limit, there's no confetti. I will make you rain like it's confetti. Show my body, show me love, very. I will take you and your forward. Don't mess up. Now I holla. I'm a Hitler. I'm a basher. You better respect how they run the town. Even that level. Don't keep turn me down. See weapon. Where you call it? Come, I be general. In Miami. Super, I get power, walk back paper, walk the shower. I get babes, the age of your mama. So just stop and this your drama.
It is mama, say your father.
Who are the pita?
Your father, oh, see me, see wala. Don't
try your wala. Who is my yawa where you enter? It's a one chance. After you know man, overthrow man from this romance. Only could at that.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, ask directions from those who are in front of you or those who have been where you want to go. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.